Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to 1 Minute Until Messiah, Free from Paul on Freedomizer Radio. It is October 2nd, Sabbath, 2 p.m. Central. We will be here until 5 p.m. Central. And if you're out there on the Pacific Coast, it is noon. So hope you are enjoying a wonderful sunny day on the Pacific Coast if you're out there. And if you are in Colorado area, it is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If you are on the East Coast, our show starts at 3 p.m. So we are hoping wherever you are in the States or if you are in another country, we do get people that join us from other countries, welcome to the show. We love Freedomizer Radio, awesome shows. And if you haven't checked us out lately, there are a lot of new additions to the program as well out there. There's, Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann on Sunday night. She just looks like she just started her show. Runs from 6 to 9, I want to say that's going to be East Coast time, 5 to 8 Central time. You're more interested in politics and that sort of a flavor. There's that show, and of course during the week we always have our Proof Negative show that we love that runs 6 to 9 Eastern, I believe. And we have all kinds of different shows, so definitely check out the Freedomizer menu of shows, and we're very glad that everybody is here with us today. I know that Sabbath, with it being Sabbath, we are very excited to get back together with everybody that we know and love, including our Aaron that joins us practically weekly. Shabbat Shalom, Aaron. How are you?
Shalom, shalom. Doing well this morning? Thank you.
It is a high Sabbath, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, perfect. I'm hoping you can tell me more about that. I am very interested in the feast days and the high Sabbath, of course, and I don't know the Hebrew names for them all, and I'm still learning, but that's what we're here for. So we're not coming here as know-it-alls, but just humbly before the Father and learning how to do things according to His voice, now that we are understanding that we need to come out of Christendom and come out of Paul and his theology. And so definitely, you know, I was learning this past week in my studies, I was learning that it was actually a pope that instigated Halloween, and he did so in place of one of the feast days of the Father. And basically that's what's happened, is that in mirroring and stealing and borrowing and turning upside down the Father's true voice, there were imprints placed over the Father's voice and replacements made for all of those fingerprints, if you will, of the Father. And one of those being holidays placed over the holy days. And so that's what's become very popular in Christianity, to celebrate the Halloween and the Christmas and the Easter in place of the true holy days. So I'm definitely interested in learning more about that.
Yeah, good. Me too. I know we're all still learning a lot. Even if we think we know something, we just need to keep looking at it, keep diving into these things and double checking and listening to that small still voice that the Spirit of our Father, you know, talking to us and correcting us and showing us things, opening our eyes to things. And I know He will continue to do that as long as we continue to listen to Him and move in that direction. Move for Him, not Rome or, you know, these. It's what a shame that they've done, and I say Rome or Christendom, to say that the Father's appointed times, His moeds, His feast days, His, you know, holy days, if you will, were nailed to some cross that Paul was talking about, and they've run with that. And now they've just grabbed a hold of every pagan holiday out there and made it a part of their Christendom program. And what a shame. It just doesn't make any sense to me how you could say all of the Creator's ways and moeds, his times are done away with, and now we're free to go out and keep, you know, heathen pagan practices now. It blows my mind. But I did it for 40-some years. So.
And if there was anything from the Father that ever came out of his city, it wasn't the city of Damascus.
No. Or Antioch, no.
And it's interesting, I have misplaced the actual scripture, but there's actual prophecy that Damascus will end up in a twisted heap of ruin. A twisted heap of ruin. And it's interesting to me because concrete and the older stones that were around in the B.C., early, I still want to call it A.D., I know they call it C.E. now. Concrete doesn't twist. What twists are the modern metals and frameworks that structures are made with. So that word twisted heap of ruin is a really big clue that there is some type of an organization that's built out of Damascus that makes it into modern day that will become completely annihilated by the Father. And that I think those are fingerprints, again, clues as to Christendom being the whore, the false, you know, that whole system of the false mm-hmm. prophet, the whore of Babylon, and so forth. And it's
the mother
just,
of harlots.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My daughter's with me. She says language. So.
Hi, Olivia. Shabbat shalom.
Hi.
Shabbat shalom.
Oh, Shabbat shalom.
She says it back.
I heard her. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, this High Sabbath, as some of you know, as you know, I've shared with you, Rachel, I'm keeping the calendar that was found at Qumran, and I had been keeping all kinds of calendars and studying all kinds of calendars before I ran across the calendar found at Qumran, which is where the Dead Sea Scroll finds are, different caves and things. And I had kind of walked away from a bunch of calendars. There's a lot of groups out there fighting. No, it's this moon. No, it's the dark conjunction. No, it's the full moon. No, it's the crescent moon. No, it's there's a lot of argument just right there on the moon calendars and the keeping of those. A lot of argument there, but they're missing a lot of things. And I'm glad that I kind of was getting involved. I was keeping a full moon calendar at the time, and I just wasn't seeing the pieces fit, and I started reading a lot of other things that pointed out that the moon is not the Father's light in the sky, if you will, for being a ruler of the night. And I just saw I started seeing a lot of changes in the different translations and different scriptures that in regards to Moed appointed times, a lot of inconsistencies. So, and then I started studying the old Hebrew as well, as far back as I could find, and it just said that there were two great luminaries that he had made on the fourth day, one to rule the day and one to rule the night, the stars. The moon is never even mentioned in that original, which is just amazing.
Correct. Correct.
Blew me away. And it makes sense to me because I've been studying the moon, actually getting outside and looking at it, going out into the woods, up into the mountains, and where getting away from the city lights and actually looking at the times when the moon is coming up and the sun is going down and trying to correlate a whole bunch of times in there that just weren't fitting. There was a lot of supposition on top of calendation there. Of a moon calendar, and here is this supposed ruler of the night spending 11 days a month, roughly, in the daylight. We just saw it here a couple of weeks ago. It was spending, nights as it was waning, or spending day, the whole daylight hours.
Is that a clue to you that maybe that's not even talking about the moon?
No, I don't. No, not at all. I don't believe it's, yeah, exactly. It's not talking about the moon at all. No.
What could
the
it
thing
be
that is constant.
About?
Well, as far as a faithful witness, you mean? Where actually, David does call
the
moon. The stars for sure. They're always there. They're always. Always there in the sky. You know, always, and I see the four seasons. That's mentioned like in Jubilees, for instance, and in Enoch, but I see the four seasons being representative in the, I think it might be the stork, but it's what we call the Big Dipper. And it points it's at 90 degrees at each change of the season every 13 weeks. And those also are times that are mentioned in Jubilees and Enoch as well, where Noah appointed those days. I believe it's chapter 6 in Jubilees. I'm sorry. I know it's in Jubilees there. Maybe it's chapter 2 where he talks about these are days that are ordained days of remembrance, and they are times to remember during the flood what Noah went through in his family and on the ark. And at each of those times, like there's the beginning of the first month and the beginning of the first fourth month and the seventh month, which we just started here a couple of weeks ago, the beginning of the seventh month, and then the beginning of the 10th month, and then, of course, then we're back to spring. Those all mark the 13 weeks and the change of the seasons, the four seasons. Feast of Trumpets, for instance, was the first day of the seventh month here just a couple of weeks ago, and that's the beginning of fall for us. And immediately after the Feast of Trumpets, it's just a matter of counting days, like David said. He asked Father, he said, teach me. He said, show me how to count my days, which is interesting because he doesn't say, you know, show me how to count my moons. And all of the, between the appointed times, all the days, the day counts are given, the Omars, everything's getting, you just have to find when the beginning of the year starts and go from there. It's just a matter of counting. It's actually quite simple. What makes it difficult for me is trying to correlate it with this, with Rome's calendar, which tries to embody everything, including all of the moon cycles. But it is become apparent to me in setting all the calendars, the way that the Gregorian moves, it is subject to the moon. However, it does keep the seventh day separate, which is also scriptural for us that are actually studying scripture and not paying attention to those that like to be called rabbi, and not focusing on a religion that was corrupted, which Messiah said, that's of the synagogue of Satan there. Is there things that we can learn from them? It's like saying, is there things that I can learn from Paul? It's somebody saying, well, there's some good and there's some truth in there. It's like, why go there? Why bother? So I just go right to the scripture.
Well, I know some people that follow the rabbis, and they will even say that their rabbis say that much can be gleaned from Paul and the New Testament, you know, when they don't believe that way. And so they're even dipping their toes
right there not to listen to them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, a little bit. We'll just go eat from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, that's kind of what it seems like to me. I mean, do we go
it's
there?
Like
no.
Trying to
eat. Stay away from it. Mixing it.
It's like trying to eat the pizza crust without getting any leaven. And calling it
or
a cracker.
Yeah.
I'm just going to eat around leaven here. When it is leaven.
Yeah, and When somebody's really studying scripture and not going to other sources and saying, I wonder what this guy thinks, or I wonder what this person thinks. And sometimes that's interesting, but for me, I just kind of have to stand off to the side and not take anybody's, you know, any man's position particularly. But I look at what I listen to what they're thinking, but I always try to stick with scripture. And if it doesn't fit the scripture, then I just kind of go back to, you know, take a step back and sometimes go back to square one and start over again. I don't see any problem with anybody doing that. In fact, that's what the Father wants us to do. It's not up to us to rightly divide the word, as Paul says. That's the Father's set apart spirit. That's what Yeshua said. That's what the Comforter will do for us. He will remind us of all that he's commanded and what we're to do. The Comforter, Yeshua gives all the attributes of the Comforter, what he's going to do. And that's it. There's no, and Paul goes and adds to it. Oh it's going to be, you know, he gives this, so the fruits of the Spirit. And it's like, what Spirit are you talking about, for one? the fruits of the Spirit are, you're going to be doing his commandments. You're going to be doing his commandments. You know, these are going to be written on your heart. These are going to be obvious. It's not going to be this love, joy, and hippie, you know, just everybody's part of the big group.
Right.
It's like, no. Yeah. I mean, it's written that Father does not assemble with the wicked. He says that I do not. He says, I actually hate sinners. He says that. I, in Ecclesiastes, he says, I hate sinners. So the whole Christian doctrine of, well, hate the sin but love the sinner, that's not Father's way at all. We need to quit sinning before he even takes notice of us, as far as I know. We could call on the names, but he's not going to leave us where we're at. Not at all. And it's still a test.
It's just... Yeah.
But
and it's just a love affair
Sabbath.
When you...
Yeah. It is a love affair.
When you really
absolutely.
Come to know him, and you come to know him and his ways and the way that he approaches things and the way that he speaks, and it just becomes an utter awe and respect and love affair. You know, but over and over and over throughout the Old Testament, how many times did he say, pray to me, or did he say, listen to me? And
right. Obey my voice,
you know, what
and
I
it
see,
shall be well with you.
What I see is obey my voice and listen to me. And he made so many mentions of that none were listening to him. So I don't know that I find it that odd that we are such a rare voice out there even talking about this, where there's really not even, you know, thankfully a sect or a denomination that we could even attribute to our manner of speech, because the minute that people start fitting into a denomination, you're back in Babylon, you're back into religion. His voice is clear, and it's unadulterated, and there's no leaven in it. There's no false doctrine in it. And, you know, we are certainly coming more and more to understand who he is, but these sets that are set up that you go and listen to a preacher and pass around a plate, and you know, they just as Paul used the Messiah's voice and laid over it false, I don't know if you would say false truths or untruths, to mimic them and proliferate his own ideas such that it led astray into something that we thought looked and breathed and mimicked the Father, but ended up really quite new, a mixture of New Age and philosophy. When you really look at it, what Catholicism is, and, you know, yeah, absolutely. And when I say Catholicism, I'm not just talking about the Catholic Church. I'm talking the whole kit and caboodle of religion is rooted and based in the marriage of Christianity is the marriage of the Father and paganism. And he, you know, through his Son, straight up said, you cannot join the two together.
Mm-hmm. We're commanded not to do what the nations around about us do.
You cannot. Right. You cannot serve two masters. You cannot put new wine into old wineskin. How many parables were there on that? Over and over and over and over. And we're standing around, or I was standing around saying, what does he mean by this? You know? But when this becomes crystal clear that religion is something that you come out of, then it becomes clear that basically in order to show your loyalty and remain loyal, there's an actual action that you take in order to be true to him and to show your loyalty. You know, I mean, I know growing up, I'm sure you probably felt this way too, but if not, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember growing up feeling like the luckiest person in the world to be born into the one true religion of Christianity, and felt so sorry for, you know, people around the world that didn't hear about Christ and so forth. Right. And as it
Born into a country based on, you know, we're told that, and we hear that all the time. Oh, America is based on Christian values.
Right.
And how lucky we are, you know, growing up. Yeah, founded. Well, it is, essentially, Roman. I mean, look at it. Capitol, Senate, Congress, that's all Roman. There's nothing Hebrew about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing scriptural about those words.
Well,
and hi, Sabbath.
I do feel... I was just going to say, I do feel very fortunate to know the Father and to know his Son, but you come to find out that the Jesus Christ that Paul talks about is an imposter and not even a real entity. It's a superimposed entity draped over the true Messiah, and you can tell that it is superimposed and an image, if you will, an image of the beast, if you will, because this Messiah has no power. He had to be raised up by the Father, which is mythological. There is no such Messiah that did not raise himself up. The Messiah that came raised himself up from the dead. So this mythological image that was portrayed saunter the saints away, or there are no true saints. That's another fallacy. But the saunter the remnant away, if it could happen, it was this image that was created, and these slight tricks of the hand that were done in proclaiming who he was. Oh, he appeared to me in the desert. And he brought me out into the desert, and for 3.5 years taught me. I was taught directly by him. When our Messiah told us ahead of time, remnant, if that's you, wake up. Our Messiah told us ahead of time, if we are told that I will appear in the desert, do not believe it. He said, believe it not. If you are told I will appear in the secret chambers, i.e. your heart, believe it not. Right. Because when I come back, you shall see me in the heavens. And as far as the east is from the west, as lightning in the sky, all eyes shall see me when I return. What do we not understand about those crystal clear words? Our Messiah left us with. And if you are not serving him, who are you serving? Right. Someone that changed their mind? Someone invented?
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I and you probably heard this too, how many times I have heard this. Well, since Messiah was crucified, everything that he said prior to that is now changed. And
so
now we're
many
in
times.
A new era. Oh, my goodness.
So many times. Dispensational.
Supposedly we're in a... Yeah. That only can be taught from one man's epistles. That can only be construed by using his words, trying to make sense of something that they... that people just have no business doing, obviously. I mean... there's a spirit speaking to them, but it's not leading them in the right direction. So something's, they need to get right with somebody. Hello.
Right.
You know.
And another thought comes to mind on that. If everything changed, you know, you hold everything up to the light, play devil's advocate, explore their idea that everything changed. If everything changed, then why, when the Messiah returned and raised from the dead, did he say as his last words to the disciples on earth that they shall keep all of his commandments? Go and teach all that I have taught you.
Mm-hmm.
That should answer that question right there.
Yeah. There are plenty of examples in his words. You know, like to the rich young ruler who asked him, "Oh, you know, Master, what should I do to inherit eternal life?" And he says, he asked him, "Well, what does it say in the Torah?" Hello.
Very profound. And, you know, I've had so many Christians tell me that Matthew 7, I believe it is, or Matthew 5, where it talks about if you even look at a woman to lust after her, you've already committed adultery, that he wasn't telling you not to look at other women because you were lust. He was telling you that it's impossible for you not to sin. That was his whole point. After reading all that chapter and even the part where it says, you know, many shall say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, and
Master,
I will
Master.
Say, depart from me, you who do not know me. For those that know me will be the ones that keep my commands. And they'll say, well, he was proving that his commandments cannot be kept. It's too difficult.
What he said there, not all those who say to me, Master, Master, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but those who do the will of my Father who is in heaven. So everybody that does the will of his Father who is in heaven will enter into the kingdom. By definition there, what he says, those that depart from me, those who practice iniquity, in the definition of the Hebrew word pa'al for worker, that is found, worker of iniquity, ordained worker of evil doing.
Right.
I mean, we can, like our friend, like Christy was doing, she was replacing the word death in like the Psalms or the grave and putting in Paul there or Saul. Understanding that they had the same definition, so they can be used synonymously. And when you read that, it's wow. Christianity's made a covenant with death, with Paul, or with Saul, excuse me. And they had become workers of iniquity like their Paul.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell me more about the Feast of Tabernacles and how you're celebrating it and so forth. The feast, High Sabbath and the feast that we're currently in.
Yeah, Tabernacles, also called Sukkot, or in the Septuagint it calls it Zechariah there, it cracks me up, but it calls it the Feast of Tent Pitching. It's the time of year where people get together and camp out. They build a sukkah, and on that day, it's a day like other Sabbaths. Basically, you're already prepared. You're camping out for the wilderness. You're prepared. It's a way of teaching us, really, I believe. But in Zechariah 14, it makes it pretty clear: those that do not keep Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, to come up to learn of his ways, are going to be cast out. That's Zechariah 14. That's just one example there that, the Father does not change, and we understand that. But Sukkot we build a little sukkah and have things prepared, meals prepared, and it's just a day. How we keep it is we fellowship together, we build our sukkahs together, we have a little meeting area where we'll have food and songs and the first day of Sukkot and then the last day of Sukkot. It goes for a week, for 8 days, well, starting on the ninth, which would be, I was trying to cover that a little bit on the play of words and show the difference between the Masoretic and the Septuagint in regarding to when Sukkot actually starts.
So have I missed it, or when did it start?
Yeah, it started, let me see. I gave my calendar away to a friend so she could copy it. So I'm kind of drawing a blank here as to which day. Well, let me see. We'll go back 10 days from this last Wednesday, and that would have been the Day of Trumpets. The first day of the seventh month is
okay.
The day of the blowing of the shofars. And then 10 days after that, on the 10th day of the seventh month, as it says in Numbers there, Exodus, excuse me, shall be the Feast of Sukkot, of Tabernacles. And then it goes on to say that actually
month, we're not talking about July.
Not the Greek
right?
Land.
Or
right, right.
Right.
No. Yeah, talking about his appointed times, his calendar, the way his calendar begins
right.
In the spring, and that would be the first month, not January, not Janosuary. Yeah.
Right.
But at the keeping of tabernacles, and it was, there was a thing in there, in the wording that Judaism uses. And I say this lightly, say this nicely, but they use to try and uphold their doctrine that a yom means day and light, that the yom begins at the onset of darkness, that a day begins at nightfall. And this is one of their proofings that they use, which is the Day of Atonement there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, excuse me, that they use for the Day of Atonement. Where,
so the day
or,
starts at, oh, you're
morning,
saying that
sunrise.
the rabbis
right,
go by
the rabbi.
Sunset, whereas, okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's 7 days. That's 7 days. Darn it, I wish I had my cat. I apologize. I'm learning it just like everybody else is, and I'm trying to memorize this, but I'm trying to keep it the way that it's written in Scripture and pretty darn clear, where you can see the inconsistencies written in. But there's also things that they didn't change in there, and it just doesn't seem to fit with it, but until you take a step back and really look at it. It wasn't until they found this what's called the Zadok Priestly Order, which is a calendar that spans, I forget, I want to say 240 years in a row of the calendation system, where you can actually see the 24 priestly rotation in a 52 weeks. And 52 weeks is how many weeks there are in a year, which comes to 364 days. Now, when I tripped over this, it was through a dissertation, Rachel Elliar, who's in charge of the Hebrew Institute. She gives a lot of speaking on a lot of talks on what the finds there at Qumran and the fragments and the there's another thing too of the Copper Scroll, which is very interesting that I've been haven't looked at there for a while. That kind of died out, but it was kind of a map of where to find the treasure. It was supposedly by Jeremiah. But a lot of those things in there. And then when I heard Rachel Elliar start to talk about this calendar system that they found there and how they referred to it as the Zadok priestly calendar, and going in and reading like Ezekiel and studying the Zadok, the sons of Zadok, and how are they are the only ones that are ordained, if you will, to distinguish between the holy and the profane and the clean and the unclean, and when a appointed time is versus an unappointed time. They're the only ones that were approved to do those things. So it was actually taken away from another sect of the House of Aaron at that time, taken away from them because they started officiating like the nations round about them, started bringing in their practices and going over to their nations and officiating for their gods as well. It's a big mistake. And then after the, okay, going back to the Day of Atonement, 7 days after the, if I remember this right, 7 days after, and that's the day where you afflict your souls. It's 7 days after the first day of the seventh month, and then 10 days after the first day of the seventh month is the Day of Tabernacles of Sukkot, tent pitching, and reading it and studying that further, it actually says that the keeping of the 10th day begins on the 9th day, where you get everything ready and prepared, and at evening is
kind of like a day of preparation.
Is the time of Sukkot.
Like preparation day is the 6th day in Sabbath keeping.
Right. But Judaism does something quite different. In fact, it's not scriptural because they say, well, the rabbis are doing it, so it must be scriptural. You know, Romans 13, you know, if the rabbis weren't doing it, Yah puts people in charge, it puts men over in charge of us, you know, and we're to obey them and follow them. You know, Romans 13, right? But high Sabbath never, appointed times, feasts, and this is scriptural, never start or begin on a seventh-day Sabbath. And it happens quite often in Judaism. They'll do that, and that's breaking the rules. But a high Sabbath is an appointed time that a seventh-day Sabbath falls in the middle of that appointed time. That would be called a high Sabbath. As well, it's during you're keeping an appointed feast time, and then a seventh day Sabbath lands in it, and that would be a high Sabbath. In our day of
Shabbat Shalom, Aaron, hey, Rachel.
Hi, Christy. Glad you could join us.
How are y'all? Thank you.
Good.
I'm so thankful too.
Wonderful.
Yes,
I have to connect
here. 4:30, but or Eastern time. Oh. But I just wanted to get on here and say hello.
So you got a few minutes?
I do.
I want to introduce. I want to connect you with a mutual friend of ours on Facebook. I think Rachel and her are connected now with Chelsea Suzanne.
Hey.
She's been trying to call in. She tried to call in last weekend, too, and then she was just messaging me here a little bit ago. She says, I'm still having trouble.
Oh, no.
But she keeps getting a busy signal when she calls in. But I need to connect you guys on Facebook. I think you were on a group chat together anyway. I'm not sure if you guys
awesome.
Are friends.
Yes.
Facebook has me locked out for another 14 days for sharing quotes from the CDC. Yeah, I guess that's the case.
So which reminds
you,
me,
you know, that's a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, I hope they suffered in the Nuremberg Code. I hope they get brought to trial.
Right.
I really do. I'd be shaking in my boots if I was them.
For our listeners that would like to call in, our phone number is area code 319-527-6208. Again, that's 319-527-6208. And you may press 1 if you would like to come out and fellowship with us. We would enjoy visiting with you. So it's, you know, I can remember the first time Dave that runs Freedomizer invited me to talk on the air, and for some reason it was quite daunting, and it's really a very relaxed atmosphere here at Freedomizer. We just converse, and it's very down to earth, so don't be shy. Just call in and have a chat with us.
It's a great fellowship.
Yes. I agree. This is about the only fellowship that I have other than staying in on the Sabbath with my family. It's hard-pressed, like the pastor that told you, Christy, good luck on finding a church without Paul.
Right. Yes.
Well, here we
it's
are.
It's like, are you taking notes? You want to ask them, are you taking notes on what you're saying? And is the light bulb going off yet?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I think it's the light of his spirit. You can talk to people till you're blue in the face. And if the spirit's just not lighting the light, I don't know. It's just, I feel like I'm talking to a wall. Yeah. It's really wild, the conversations I've had. And I have to tell myself not to get frustrated, but just a reminder that I'm just planting seeds, you know? I'm trying to plant the seeds. I'm not going to pull out the tares in case, you know, I take out someone that, you know, I just want to do it gently, but, you know, inside I'm just, like, screaming. So.
Oh, yeah. You sound like Chelsea. Yeah, I need you. I think you two would hit it off great. She's kind of at that point now too where she's getting angry and frustrated with people, so she's just having to walk away without, you know, getting in an argument or screaming at them or yelling at them. But she's telling me I sure want to, and I go, all of us do, but that's, we have to be gentle as doves.
We do. Own family just thinks that this sounds ludicrous, that what I'm saying, that Paul is false and the anti-Messiah. I mean, it does, when you're just not awake yet, it does sound like she is off her rocker. But it's, you know, I just pray that his spirit just starts igniting this fire that, you know, Yahushua said he came to kindle. So
I do too. I agree with you there. Absolutely. I mean, I hope they do too. And we've had so many friends. Alex is a great example. He and I would go back and forth a few times on things. He's like, I don't quite see what you're talking about here, Aaron. And we went back and forth for maybe a month. And then finally one day he was reading through a post that I had. And then he made a comment. He made a comment and he says, I get it now. I see it. Okay, that makes perfect sense. And then it's like, let's go here to Deuteronomy 13. Okay, does it matter if Paul says something wrong once? According to Deuteronomy 13, if anybody teaching or, you know, being a prophet or prophesying or whatever is wrong once, we're to throw them away, basically. And there it is. There's Paul. Throw them away. Get him out of your life. It was like, wow. And then, you know, and what you've experienced this, I'm listening to you and how the little things that you've seen in consistent and complete contrast to the words of Messiah, that you go, well, that's not right. And the next thing you know, when you admit that and voice that to people or share that with people, next thing you know, more things are popping out. More things are being shared with you. More things are coming to your mind. All that he has commanded.
Yes.
It's like, it just pours out. It just starts pouring out one thing after another. And then we have the Paulinians that have a good, it's not even good. You just have to be stuck in your mind. You have to be willful about it to want to listen to this Paul guy anymore, to think that Messiah or the Father spoke through this Paul guy.
Yeah, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And it's just,
right,
a complete paradox. Like, everything that he says is just complete opposite. And now you just start hearing the Messiah's voice even more and more, and then you know you're his sheep. So that's kind of cool. You know, it's very reassuring that you hear his voice more clearly. You know, I did have a really cool conversation with my 19-year-old son. You know, he's actually, the light, I think, is starting to come on a little bit, but I don't want to push it. I don't want to push it on my right now. But they're starting to, he's just starting to think, you know, I'm just encouraging them, just think, just use your critical thinking skills that we've taught you all these years. You know, now he's an adult, he's 19, so he's starting to ask questions, and
Not really. Us guys don't grow up, start growing up till about 27, 30 years old. But no, that's neat.
But he's starting to question.
And that's not something they teach in school.
Question.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it isn't. We did homeschool for a while. We did the classical way of learning, and we've really introduced the logic. You know, they don't take logic classes anymore in school, and I loved that class.
True.
They took, and
yes.
You know, it is like 1 + 1 = 2. It's just, I mean, if Messiah is saying it and James is saying it, and, you know, there, it's almost, and then Paul says the opposite. Come on, that doesn't equal. That's not equal. So I'm just trying to teach him that, because
today
my son was asking. Yes, go ahead.
Today they teach the class in college, what do the facts have to do with it?
Oh, ridiculous.
Oh, my goodness.
Instead of logic, they teach, what do the facts have to do with it? You know, I mean, it's just... So we go out
sickness,
to a restaurant and say, what does the menu have to do with it? What do the items on the menu have to do with it? Let's just cook up whatever we want back in the kitchen. And what do the prices have to do with it? Let's just charge them whatever we feel like is market price today. And, you know, I mean, it's just what the world that we are finding ourselves living in, people, you know, like with the Black Lives Matter, for example, you know, with 97% of the population of murders that are occurring being attributed to blacks killing blacks, and yet they're blaming other races for their death. And if Black Lives Matter, and they do, then where is the responsibility and the ownership taken in solving the problem amongst your own race, instead of pointing the finger and saying, you know, that this is an issue of racism from whites against blacks. And what do the facts have to do with it? Nobody wants to look at the facts of the statistics. They just, what do the facts have to do with it? Doesn't matter. You know, just throw that out and lay over it whatever truth you so-called untruth that you call truth over it, just like Paul did with his gospel that he laid over and called it that of the Messiah that came. What do the facts have to do with it? This is what I say.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I have a very, very dear, beloved, he's primarily black. He's multicultural, European, lots of different races. But he's half black and half multicultural from a lot of different countries. And he sounds Caucasian. I met him over the telephone. We were in business together. And when I was out in California, I always asked him to send me a picture. I wanted to know what he looked like, and he said, that's going to be I have a surprise for you when you get here. And we met for breakfast at this nice little
restaurant with some other people that were also in business with us, and he walks up, and he's got this deep radio voice, just really, you know, kind of like you, Aaron, that wonderful voice over the radio that you just could listen to forever. And he walked up and introduced himself, and he said my jaw dropped because he was, you know, looked primarily like a black man. And but he asked me, you know, recently what I thought about Black Lives Matter. And, you know, he's such a dear friend, and I know that I would not probably speak to him again if I gave him all of this, because he has the kindest, most gentlest, tenderest, giving heart of pretty much anybody I know. But he doesn't, and, you know, this is my perspective, and we all have one, doesn't see things clearly as far as it goes with that. And but yet I hear him talk about the tears he's cried over it and everything, and I relate to the fact that he's being human. But I think it's so dangerous when we get away from the facts, and you know, that the issue of race and racism is just one small area that a lot of people really don't have the courage to even talk about, because they don't want to estrange people that they love, you know. But the more important issue here is the fact of who the Messiah is and who the Father is, and how we've been tricked, and we think, oh, it doesn't matter if we are celebrating Christmas. In fact, it's a good thing to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, because the whole world celebrates it. Even the pagans celebrate it. But at their heart, they know it's giving honor to Jesus Christ, and they can't ever get to the Tootsie Roll in the center of the lollipop and realize that Jesus Christ was invented by Paul, and you were never supposed to celebrate his birthday in the flippin' first place. But you're keeping a pagan holiday. You were tricked into keeping a pagan holiday. So God are you serving? That's my true point. For our listeners, if I'm stepping on toes with the Black Lives Matter issue, I don't mean to. I have a different perspective of it. I happen to have a perspective that you're going to call conspiratorial, because I know that the man that supposedly stepped on the neck of the other man, they worked together as bouncers, and it was all an acting job that went right in front of our eyes as theatrical stagery to incite my friend out in California to ball his eyes out and be a proponent of the Black Lives Matter movement, because they want us divided. And he constantly talks about how divided we are, but we're divided because it was set up that way by the Masons. They're everywhere, and they want to keep us talking about things that don't matter, aren't true, so we never learn the truth about the Father.
It's controlled opposition. They're always controlling the narrative. It's Hegelian. They control both the synthesis and antithesis. That's their favorite thing to do. You're correct. And they love it. They love chaos. It's almost like a bipolar organization, you know? That makes me sad to hear. It makes me sad to hear that a lot. Even in the Hebrew Roots movements, that there's a. We've all seen the posts and read people saying that, you know, it's the, your blood. You know, if you don't have blood that matches up with those that claim to be, you know, Hebrew or Jews, well, then we couldn't possibly be one. Or we hear that if we don't have the right color of skin.
Like, yes.
You know, and I'm like, show me a verse, let alone two or more to establish a matter, but show me one verse, please, that really solidifies this concept that they're trying to push, that as long as you have the right kind of blood or the right kind of skin color, you're good to go. I mean, that sounds like they're paying attention to these rabbis again, too. Well, if you can't do anything wrong, if you have the correct DNA or skin color or blood or whatever, you can't. It doesn't matter what you do. You're saved. You're chosen. But I don't catch that at all. What's going
Absolutely,
on, Rachel?
I agree, and I think when you first come into this understanding, you see a lot of people go that route with the Hebrew roots movement and the blood and so forth and so on, right?
But I read that there should be one law.
Sorry, I was muted. I was saying that just because, like what you said last week, just because you're on DePaul doesn't mean you've come out of him completely, like you were saying last week.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
just an attribute that, you know, people have varying degrees of coming out of him, and it ends up being a situation where it's revealed that you still have a lot of Pauline beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It really is a point where you have to start over and just return to your first love, as he says to Ephesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, return to your first love. Now that you've figured it out, now you put these guys to the test, so to speak, and you've figured out who the false apostles are. Now return to your first love. You know, it's great, wonderful, but return to your first love. And that's kind of what it is. It's like for me, it was a starting over period. And when I was doing that, these things would pop out at me. Well, wait a minute. He says, like here, for instance, Messiah says, the bread that he took and he blessed and he gives it to his disciples. He says, this is my body. Well, wait a minute. Paul says, we are his body. That's not right. You know, a lot of things change. It changed for me in returning to my first love and just hanging on his every word, his word, not those that claim to be, you know, have him living in them and he's speaking through them and speaking contrary to what he taught. While John says those who deny that he came in the flesh are Antichrist, have the spirit of Antichrist. And John even says, is already here. But I guess if you're in denial of that, you're going to be looking for some guy 2,000 years in the future, right? Because it couldn't be Paul, right? Just couldn't be. Because Paul says that he's living in him. And he understands all the mysteries and has been ordained and sent from the Father, you know, to teach us all these mysteries and to fill up what was lacking in Christ's afflictions. People believe that.
Oh, so we have to come to Paul for him to give us all of the secrets to the mysteries? Is that what? That's just...
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't
that's what he says.
So.
And these, yeah, exactly. And these mysteries are a twist. And he leaves you in Greek philosophy, come to find out. You know, your flesh is horrible, your flesh is sinful, but your spirit is good. If it weren't for your flesh, your wicked flesh body container being alive, you know, you got to release this good spirit that's within you, but it's contained by this horrible, wicked, sinful flesh. Yeah, that's Greek philosophy.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Torah that says that at all. And there's, you know, it's a doctrine in Christianity.
Yeah,
and
in
I
Romans
sure don't
it
like
says
it.
There's nothing good that dwells in me. Really?
Yeah.
Nothing
well,
good? Like, okay.
Well, he's being honest there. See, there is some truth in his words, right? Come to find out, he's correct. There is nothing good that dwells in that man.
Oh, okay. Maybe in him.
Yeah, exactly. But don't try and push that off on me or Christy. Yeah, speak for yourself, Paul.
That's another thing that I've noticed, and that he just, that whole mindset of, no, we're just, you know, we're just too bad. We can't do anything. We're just wretches. That's really played a mind game, I think, on a lot of Christians. I really do. Like, then they're stuck in this hole that, oh, my goodness, they're just worthless. Can't do anything right. And Torah, you can't even live that out. It's impossible. When the Messiah said, no, it's not a burden, it's light. My yoke is easy.
It's not far from you.
It's not. But, you know, now Christians are left in this pit that, like, oh, man, I'm just, like, nothing. I'm worthless. I can't do anything. There's nothing I can do to be right with God.
Yeah. Who does it quote?
The wrong way. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I asked him, what about Zechariah?
And I'm thinking to myself, I was thinking that too. I was just like, gosh, I'm just worthless.
might as well give up, you know? Yeah.
Right? There's nothing I can do. That's right.
There is actually religion, a Christian religion, another twist, another sect here that added here, I want to say it's about three years ago now, that believes that they don't have to do anything, but just wait for a Messiah to return and he will straighten them out. But in the meantime, there's nothing that they can do. And that's actually a religion now. I can't remember the name of it. We had some friends that were involved in it for about a year before they finally realized the guy that they were listening to in regards to that was off his rocker. There's too many proofs, though, like we've been reading. Zechariah and Elizabeth there in chapter 1 and verse 5 of Luke. It starts right there. In the days of Herod, there was a man, a high priest by the name of Zechariah. And his wife Elizabeth, and they were both walking in the ways of the Father, keeping his commandments, walking in his ways, and they were found blameless. That's righteousness. It says just. They were found just, walking in all of his ways. That's righteous.
And to me, that's so encouraging, you know? It's just that it makes you want to walk in righteousness. Makes you want to pursue that. And it's, you know, he really moved me with that because, you know, the son came, the Messiah came, and he did so many good works. He healed people. He went to help the sick, and I'm a nurse. So I'm just, that was just so encouraging to me. I just thought, wow. His example is so beautiful. But no, Paul just says, no, we're just wretched. It's just worthless. Filthy rag. They're all your good deeds. And I just start seeing, I'm like, absolutely not.
Now they were amazed by him. For the first time ever, somebody was actually making people, giving recovery of sight back. That never happened before. People were given their sight back. And then, what was Paul's first miracle? Supposedly a miracle.
Blinding somebody.
He
got bit by a snake. That's right.
Not dying when he got bit by a snake, wasn't it?
Oh, that's later on.
And they
that's after
him
they come
a
off the ship, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I believe his first
He also
his first
took
one
the relic
to
with the handkerchief and was supposedly able to heal people from them touching the handkerchief that he had.
His apron. What happened to the Zizi?
And that's true.
That the woman that came up behind Messiah.
Apron too. Exactly. That was the type and shadow imposter miracle of that, right?
Yeah, right. Paul's types and shadows. It's the only place I find that is in his epistles, the types and shadows of things to come and have come and will come again. Back when I used to believe that Paul was an apostle, I would even point at that to people. It's like, why are you not keeping the Sabbath? Even Paul says, you know, that they kept it back then and will be keeping it in the future. But we're not supposed to keep it now? That doesn't make any sense to me. Using the types and shadows that have come, or, you know, it just didn't make any sense to me. It was just another proofing of the Sabbath for me, or the Sabbath day, that it is still binding and is still sanctified as it was from the beginning. Our Father does not change.
Well, and you just made a very good point, because that relic, that handkerchief, supposed handkerchief, actually being an apron, just shows where masonry came from.
Yes. And it's weird that it lost its power.
The first pope, the first Freemason, the first master builder, what else, you know?
Mm-hmm. The first Christian? Well, actually, we're finding out he's not the first Christian. That word Christian was used back in 400 B.C. So those at Antioch, I don't know about them. I don't know. And it really seems that Christianity was conceived in Antioch and birthed in Rome. It has absolutely nothing to do with...
I should tell you something.
Yeah. That's wide path. It really is a wide path. Well, look, everybody's doing it, Rachel. Definitely wide path.
Exactly.
Philosophy, theology, everything is in that wide path, and it's good and paved and all ready for you just to step in and just follow everybody else. Just come along with us. You don't have to use your own mind. You know, you don't have to use common sense. You don't even have to read scripture anymore. Just say the magic words, right?
Seems that way. Definitely.
And boy, if you're not on the wide path, you're a cast out. You're a cast out if you're not involved with that wide path club.
And you can't reconcile that, you know, there's so many people in the churches that are filling up. It just seems like it's all about the numbers. And he says the way is narrow. How do you reconcile that with the way it looks with these mega churches?
It's the opposite of what the mega churches teach. You know, that word narrow there. You look up when he says the way is narrow, and it says wrought with troublesome tribulation. You know, it's going to be hard. You know, it's not going to be all smooth sailing. But then, you know, that goes against what the charismatics say, that, you know, the Pentecostals, they say, oh no, once you say the magic words, your bank account's going to fill up, you know, the road's going to be nice and paved ahead of you now, and things are just going to be so much easier. It's the opposite of what Messiah said. He actually told us that the time has come, and now is, when you shall be scattered. Of course, he was speaking to his disciples, but I mean, I hope I'm one of his disciples. I hope you are too. I mean, and we all desire to have this fellowship, and I'm so grateful, Rachel, that we have this fellowship, that we can get and talk on the Sabbath and really talk about the ways Messiah wanted us to be. you know, what he intended for us to understand in all the warnings that he gave us, you know, about what was going to happen. And here it is unfolding before us. Shoot, we were involved in it. And to me, it's a miracle. I am humbled. I am humbled to think, like Christy is saying, you know, this is just amazing to see these things and have them come out and understand that, you know, Paul is against us. And we've been playing devil's advocate this whole time, you know, involved with religion. It just humbles me and we should never lose that being humbled.
I think there must really be something to the term, the image of the beast. You have the beast, the imposter. The image of the beast is portrayed to us as the reality of who the Father and the Son are, when in fact they are just images of religion or images of the beast. Religion actually is the whore, and that's what's so crazy deceptive, because people, you know, even as an insurance adjuster, I would see a lot of images of the so-called Jesus Christ on people's walls, and lo and behold, it's actually the son of one of the popes that died that he had an artist paint and deem him to be the image of the Messiah, Bergius.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember realizing this. I mean, this was about a year and a half ago when I really start realizing this is all basically an illusion based on someone's false religion. You know, it felt like a punch in the gut. It did. But, you know, when you realize, you start seeing the lies, you know, you humbly come before him, our Father, he just starts revealing things incrementally. But yeah, that was one of the things I realized, that image, the image of the beast is an illusion. And that's what religion is. It's an illusion. It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard pill to swallow. You know, I thought flat Earth was the grand illusion, you know? I was like, that is wild. I can't believe it. And then, you know, you keep humbly coming before the Father, and I just, you know, wow. Yeah, well, is there more, you know? And then you learn his name and the Torah, and then, you know, the last one recently was the Paul lie. But I just, you know, it's just having interesting conversations with my 19-year-old son, who's slowly coming to the truth. And he's questioning. He's like, is Christianity just something to control people? That's what my son said.
Good.
Interesting.
It is. Yeah.
Just pray for
our
children.
I'm happy for him. Yeah.
But yeah, just that picture that's been presented to us of the Pope's son as the image of the beast, right? So it's just I'm also a home health nurse. I was a home health nurse for years, and I would see all that stuff all over the houses, and I was just, you know, I just wondered. But then, you know, I came to the truth and I thought, wow, he's really pulled the veil over everybody's eyes.
Yeah, learning Torah, and that we're not to have any of those idols, images. And, those come off the wall pretty quick. Just learning Torah. And it should also, just knowing that much about Torah, should get us to question what Paul did on Mars Hill when he declared that statue, that idol of of an unnamed God when he declared that to be. What did he do to people then? And then also in his other epistles where he tells people, it sounds like a commandment, you know, we're to go to the foot of the cross. And he turns that into an idol, an image as well. And speaking of that image of the beast, some of the things, the difference between the Masoretic text and the Septuagint, in Isaiah specifically, the Catholics took it upon themselves to change the word, the phrase day star, to Lucifer. I believe it was around the time of, in the 1400s that they did that, maybe a little bit earlier. But they changed that phrase day star to Lucifer, making it, they're illuminated one. But in the study of that, it points to highly suspect that that's actually Nimrod was the beast, also known as the beast. And just looking at it that way, Christianity or Trinitarianism, if you will, as an image to that beast, it's highly suspect because there is Nimrod and his wife Semiramis, who is called the Queen of Heaven, and Nimrod was the bright and shining star or whatever that they, you know, the illuminated one, the day star, and his son Tammuz, and his son's the symbol for Tammuz was a cross, an X, or a cross. So it is like an image unto this beast, the beast system. Thought that was interesting. I thought I'd throw that in there. I haven't studied that a whole lot, but as far as Nimrod being the beast, he was called a beast. He was known as a beast. And this Gilbert? Image that we have of a beast. Yes. You still there?
Yes, sir.
But it seemed to be, the Trinitarian seemed to be the same system of worship that was carried on in Babylon that Semiramis brought in that religion to worship her dead husband. And, the mythology that's in that, in the Babylonian mythology there, that she was able to resurrect most of Nimrod, bring him back to life, but it was apparently, I'm not sure how that went. I don't remember. I apologize, but it's a Trinitarian system when you look at the religion of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz. And the symbols that are brought in at that same time, and it just seems to be such a coincidence that they have the same similarities as Christianity, as Trinitarianism anyway, the mother church, Rome. Did you have to leave us, Christy?
Yeah, in a few minutes.
Okay.
Going to go visit a sick friend, and she's giving my son one of her beds that one of her sons is not using. So just nice Shabbat fellowship.
Good day for it. Certainly beautiful, sunny up here in North Idaho today.
Yeah.
Nice weather for Sukkot.
Nice. Yeah.
It's been a real test. This would be the third year that I've kept Sukkot now. So it's been 3 years that I've really started keeping and really studying the appointed Moed, the appointed times of Father, Father, the feast days and the celebrations.
That's wonderful.
And it seems like
we'll have to compare notes
year,
then on dates, because I thought the dates were a different date. So I made our downstairs porch sucker. And no, even then again, my family's just like, what is she doing? So maybe next year they'll be on board. Yeah, I feel like I'm in this alone, but we'll have to compare dates next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I love doing that. That's one of the things that's definitely
like,
worth contending for.
It seems like a lot of people are waking up to the point in time, too, which is so exciting to be alive, you know, if we're slowly waking up a remnant. And, you know, and I was speaking, too, and I kept different dates. But, you know, I feel like I'm just a baby in this, you know. I'm coming to him like a child. I do wear tzitzit, but I don't have the official one, so I tie blue thread on my jeans or my shorts. Even then again, they're like, what is that on your shorts? But I think the father, you know, he knows I'm trying.
Yeah, that's neat. Do people actually ask you about him?
Even my husband's like, what is that on your shorts? I'm like, oh, it's just tzitzit. You know, I'm just learning all about it. They just think I'm crazy right now.
Yeah. Numbers 15:38. Tell him to open his Bible up to Numbers 15:38. Yeah. And then go to the woman who is bleeding for 7 years, who came up behind Messiah. And she was saying, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, you know, if I could just touch his garment, I'll be healed. But she was going specifically for his tassels, it says there, and she grabbed a hold of his tassels.
Aww,
and he felt power go out of him. Yeah, the tzitzit. Yeah,
what do you call
those,
tzitzis or?
It's like T-Z-I-T, tzitzit.
Tzitzit. It's a T-Z-Z-Z sound. T-Z.
Yeah.
T-Z.
Z-Z. Yeah.
I don't know. That represents first fruits, right? Is that correct?
Oh,
that's what I was learning.
Well, Numbers 5:38, I'll read it. It's not very long. It's actually.
Okay.
It's a command. It's a commandment and known to.
I know.
Like in the rabbis, I guess you would say traditionally the rabbis have taught that it's one of the least of the commandments. Isn't that interesting that they would say it was one of the least of the commandments? And
we're teaching the least, so that's awesome.
Well, we're teaching not to keep the least of the commandments. Or, you know, we are teaching, you know, that it is one of the, and we're doing it.
We have to do it. I don't know. I come to him like a child. I take Messiah's words literally. I do. My family, I'm like, look, this is what he said. So I'm coming to him like a child. If all I have is loose thread, that's all I got right now.
Numbers 15:38. Or it starts in 37 here. It says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a ribbon of blue, a riband of blue, yeah. And it shall be unto you for a fringe, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of Yahuwah and do them. And that you seek not after your own heart and after your own eyes, after which you used to go a-whoring, that ye may remember and do all my commandments and be holy and to be set apart unto your Elohim. I am Yahuwah, your Elohim, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim, your Almighty One. I am Yahuwah, your Elohim. Yeah. And it's been taught as one of the least of the commandments. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Yeah. So to look upon them and remember them. I wear them with pride.
So
nobody's asked me about them yet, though. Isn't that
Oh no, I my family has, and I just think,
I'm glad.
See, we can do this. We can live out the commandments. We can do this. See,
yeah.
I'm trying to find the ones I can do,
well,
and I do them.
Well, and it's interesting. It's interesting because you hear people say, I don't need to wear those because I already remember all the commandments, and yet you're claiming you remember all the commandments, but you forgot that one.
Yeah, the least. Yeah. Well, I guess you'll be called least in the kingdom then. Yeah. It's not funny, but it's just like they're not thinking about it. Yeah.
And that's coming from somebody who doesn't yet wear them. I'm just making a point. And I have had that intention, and I need to do that. I've come to the understanding that they're much more meaningful when you go and buy the material and make them yourself rather than having someone make them for you, because you're supposed to be thinking about all the commandments as you make them. So that's on my list. But Aaron, you can tell us more about that. But something had occurred to me recently, you know, how the English language, how in the translations a lot of small conjunctions were added in order for there to be understanding that we're not necessarily in the original. And I was wondering about remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. What if the word "it" was added? You have what? Remember the Sabbath to keep holy. So it's something that I just wonder about, because in adding that word "it," you have mass from the masses that it is possible to keep holy, which Paul says, of course, you cannot. And we know that you can, because many righteous men were named throughout history by the Father. And so it just has occurred to me as something to also research whether that could have been what was meaning to be portrayed. As you remember the Sabbath and that union that you have with the Father in heaven, he keeps you holy. He keeps you on the right path.
Mm-hmm. It's a good start. It's one of the signs mentioned in Torah. It's one of the signs mentioned that his people will be doing, will be remembering and keeping.
Yeah,
I'm looking here. I don't have anything in italics in Exodus 20, verse 8. It just says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Nothing italicized in there that shows that there was a word added, but I know exactly what you're saying, Rachel. There are things that have been just kind of inserted there to try to keep a smooth flow, if you will, but they can actually change doctrine. We need to be looking at those, making sure that we're really on the right path, on the same page.
And we do it out of love for him.
Right. Interesting.
That's why I do it.
At that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, guys, I have to get going, but it was really wonderful talking to you both. Thank you for your insights.
Have a good
Sabbath. Thank you.
Absolutely. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shalom.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a good point. Good point you brought up there on the Sabbath.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
I find it difficult to comprehend how anybody can really study this and say that the Sabbath was nailed to the cross, or that we no longer have to keep the Sabbath anymore. It's no longer binding. I just don't understand it. And then to turn around and say, well, now we keep Sunday, or the first day of the week, that it's all been shifted since Messiah came and was crucified. Now everything's changed. And now we keep Sunday. or the first day of the week, instead of remembering the Sabbath day throughout our generations, for it shall be a sign forever.
Well, and if you can look at this through the negative of the photograph rather than the actual photograph, and think about the fact that all of the commandments basically are talking about abstaining from something, or at least the last six are talking about abstaining from something except the Sabbath day, which is an action that you take, you remember, right? So it's it's a telltale reflection of your heart. If your heart is one of making excuses and creating a Tower of Babel to do it your own way, to reach God according to your own gospel or according to Paul's gospel that gives you an out, then you're going to be inclined to say, aha, I believe this. The commandments were nailed to the cross. It's too difficult, rather than the authentic original gospel that was in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. Too difficult, huh? Too difficult to remember, to keep it set apart.
Well, that's reciprocated, you know. If it's too difficult to remember him, it will be too difficult for him to remember you. Many shall say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, didn't I? The people are basically saying, remember me, remember me. I did this in your name, and I did that in your name. And he says, depart from me. I never knew you.
Right.
Just interesting how that's reciprocated.
Yeah, the three things given, the three signs given would be circumcision, or excuse me, we'll start with the Sabbath, keeping all of the Torah, his commandments, and that is circumcision. And those are the three signs in the Old Testament, if you will, that point to his people, that they are his people walking in his ways. And those are the three main points of contention in Paul's epistles. To remove that hedge, which is the Torah, to remove the Torah from our lives, and we no longer have to keep the commandments, you know, as he says, because he does a play on words there, because now they're written on our hearts. So now we no longer have to keep them. It's like, well, why would they be written on our hearts if we don't have to know them or keep them? You know, we don't have to be circumcised. We're now circumcised in the heart and not in the flesh. So we don't have to walk in his ways. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just too analytical about things, but if something to keep is written on your heart, you think you would keep it and not go out of your way to break it or to make something else to replace it. You know, there's a lot of replacement theology going
on. It's like a
cheating
husband saying, you know, I love you.
Yeah, you're always my first.
In heaven.
But. Yeah. And that's the ways of
the
Antichrist.
What do you make of, and I'm just curious, this is just me thinking of something I've been curious about, wondering about your opinion. What do you make of so many pastors having that pastor sound in their voice? And so many pastor wives having that pastor way about them? Like, what is that? I don't even want to put words into what I think it could be, but I mean, you can hear a sound in their voice and know that they're a pastor of a church somewhere. Do you know what I'm talking about? That Billy Graham,
yes.
That T.D. Jakes, that it's almost like an accent that they learn at seminary school, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it becomes one of, I am the one in authority, but people in the church associate it with, oh, he's the one to look up to religiously, but, you know, knowing what we know, not so much. But do you
right.
know what how is that caused, or have you ever put any thought to that?
Well, I think it's just part of the training when they go to seminary. It's part of the training. You want to make money, you want to be successful, and you want to have power. This way of speaking and enunciating words and drawing things out seems to hold people's attention there. Yeah, it's a sales pitch kind of, way of, it's not actually just being straightforward. You're not even being yourself, really. It's learning how to be a DJ, how to speak on the radio to keep people's attention.
Yeah, right. Or an auctioneer.
Talks
really fast and 90 miles per hour. Interesting. I've always wondered about that and where the origin of it was,
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I didn't have my calendar with me. I loaned it to a friend of mine so she could write her stuff down transfer it over to her calendar. I should have memorized it a little bit better. I'm trying to. Just like the rest of us here, I'm really trying to walk in his ways and learn them and memorize them. And I think we really need to memorize those things and the day counts, especially for his appointed times. It's really not that difficult. It's just the rest of life gets in and the distractions. And next thing you know, a week has gone by and you're like, I really wanted to study that. Darn it.
I definitely want to get a hold of that when you do get it. And I would love for you to talk about it next week or sometime here in the near future. I definitely want to dig into, we're getting into the holiday season, the Christian holiday season. I think it'd be excellent to really dig into the history of the pagan holidays versus the holy days in an upcoming broadcast as well.
Okay. I'll work on that. I don't know if I can get it done by next Sabbath, but I'll definitely do that. It's a good thing.
Sounds
to know.
Good.
It really is. Just, finding your first day of the year, and then it's just amount of counting your days in between the appointed times, and sometimes those appointed times go from one feast to another, and in the middle there's another feast that's there, and it's like a day of days of remembrance and things that all fall in there, but they can all be counted out, and by the time you get to the end, you've had 364 days there. There's other things too in the pagan Gregorian, the heathen pagan ways that they keep that are actually but the times that they do it in are against the commandments in a way that we were to celebrate and bring out the old things out of the storehouses in the spring and have big feasts together then, but they have us bringing out things, in December for the big Christmas parties and everything, spending all of your money, all these things that you've saved up and stored away for a rainy day, if you will. Oh, no, now they have us going out and extending our, putting big bills up on our credit cards, It's not what we're supposed to be doing that time of year. But definitely like to show the contrast there in Scripture.
Right, absolutely.
It's such a business.
It really is. And when you think about even the, if you follow it through a logical path, the whole idea of celebrating the birth of the Messiah in the first place, when it was the death, burial, and resurrection that is what is important in the matter, is so backwards. And it supposedly comes from Passover and,
I mean, even the rabbinical Jews, do they celebrate the birth of the lamb that they eat at Passover? I mean, it's, you know, if you can just sit down, clear your slate, and follow the pathway backwards on some of the beliefs that you have, removing yourself from the tradition and the euphoric emotion that, you know, and sometimes it's euphoric emotion associated with the tradition. I know, you know, growing up as somebody that grew up as one in a family member that revered the Christmas season and the Christmas holiday and getting together and sitting at Christmas trees. And, you know, there's the little Raggedy Ann twin ornaments. I had a blue one. My sister had a green one. And we always had a bird on the tree. And my father was a potter, and we used to take little, you know, circles of clay and stamp a dog's foot in there and put a little dog paw of our pets up there. And, you know, you just, you put those things away and you get them out the next year. And as you're putting the tree up, your whole family goes through a trip, a memory trip as you're putting it up. And it becomes a family tradition and something that's meaningful and something that you love and that evokes a love emotion and a fondness, and you associate that, well, you know, you're taking away all my fun if you tell me we can't do Christmas. And it's a very clever twist on getting people to be loyal to paganism, how this has evolved. But if you can just sit down, get in your quiet place and follow these things back, these traditions that you do, and follow them back to their origin, then it becomes a great aha, if you're truly devoted to the Father, of, you know, this really has nothing to do with what we, you know, should be following. And I'm going to take a quick break here, if you can carry on talking for a second.
Okay. That was very difficult for me, as I'm sure
it is for
a lot of people.
I thought I was.
Yeah, the first year that I said, nope, no more pagan holidays, no more Christmas. I think I still did Thanksgiving that year, but it was more like an American type holiday, our country's, you know, celebrating our country's Thanksgiving type thing, not a replacement of an appointed time, but I don't even Thanksgiving anymore because my values are not based on Christian values anymore. They're really not.
That first year, they made it sound so horrible. Like, what? They make it sound like you are the pagan for ceasing to hold to Christmas and these values associated with it. Now you're the pagan in the eyes of the world, and it's interesting how the switcheroo, what the switcheroo did to us, and it's actually caused it to be a where it takes a lot of fortitude to be his.
It does.
You've got
to
be willing to mentally, emotionally get past what the world now thinks about you, and you know you can explain it to those you feel led to, but like Christy was saying earlier, it really takes the Father's spirit for people to hear you and for it to connect and click. Otherwise, they're going to be looking at you like you have four eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be willing and having to be striving for to know the truth, to really want to know the Father the way that he wants us to know him. Yeah, and it was tough that first Christmas that, you know, and of course everybody's wishing you happy holidays, you know, or Merry Christmas, you know, and how do you respond to that? It's almost like where John says in 1 John, you know, don't, if they come with a different doctrine other than, you know.
Very true.
Than they don't have the Father and they don't have the Son. If they come to you with a different doctrine other than this, don't even welcome them to you. Don't even bid them have a good day.
Don't even wish them Godspeed.
Yeah.
Don't even wish them Godspeed.
Yeah, so don't have anything to do with them. And I'm reminded when you were talking there, that verse came to my mind there where Yusha says, unless you, yeah, and family tradition, you know, family tradition. But you, Messiah says, unless you, you know, you hate your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your wife, your own kids, heck, even your own life, and follow after me, you cannot be my disciple. And that's kind of, that I remembered that thing, you know, his saying there. Every time I think, oh,
you
gosh, what am I doing, you know? You know, but that's what it is. It's those things like that help me stick to my guns, you know, stick to it. That's, and here I am, you know, three Christmases, or it's coming up on my third Christmas, I guess you could say, that I haven't been keeping them, these appointed holidays of Rome. And it doesn't bother, I actually get excited about it. I'm actually kind of proud of the fact that I don't keep them now. And I don't mean proud as in I'm better than anybody else, but it's just, I'm glad, you know, it gives me, I'm happy with it. I'm fine. It doesn't bother me like it did the first year. It's, how can I say, it's almost like driving by the dicks.
My tagline comeback has been, I keep the holy days, not the holidays. Just, you know, in the event that their heart is open to, well, what's that all about? Tell me more. You know, you just never know. We were one of those at one point.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep, didn't even keep the least of the commandments, like the Z32 we were talking about. Yeah, and I'm glad Christy was getting asked, you know, by her family, what are those things that you're wearing? That's neat. I keep expecting that. I keep hoping that somebody will ask me, what's that you're wearing? You know, or I can share with them the least of what's been traditionally called the least of the commandments. And what Yusha says, you know, those who teach to keep the least of the commandments will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. And those who teach, you know, to not keep the least of the commandments shall be called the least in the command, which is actually what Paul means. That's kind of crazy that in Latin.
That's what I mean about looking at the negative.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And when you look at the negative, and I don't mean negative as in something ill feeling. I'm talking about like a proof. Like when you look at film in the old days, when you had film and you saw a negative, you could see the opposite colors in it to the one that's produced when you have the film developed. So if you look at those verses right there and you see that you shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven, doesn't mean you're going to be in the kingdom of heaven and be called least. It means by those in the kingdom of heaven, you shall be least. And interestingly enough,
need
Paul's
a Latin
name,
thesaurus.
Yeah. Right. It means least. It's one of the meanings of his name. So you shall be called Pauline. You shall be called of Paul. You shall be called of the anti-Messiah, the one who brought the flatteries and practiced and prospered. And by the very fact that you're having this argument with me, you're proving that he practiced and prospered through flattery because you were subject to it, and he prospered in your heart, and now you're arguing his doctrine with me instead of staying faithful to the Father in heaven. And that's actually one of the things that they changed in seminary school, that, oh, if you don't keep the commandments, you will still be in the kingdom of heaven. You just won't be one of the great ones. Because remember, Paul's the one with the hierarchy.
Right. Yeah. Who was the greatest prophet of all, born among women? And Yusha says, that was John the Baptist. Yet he shall be called least in the kingdom. Or, probably not saying that right here. Let me look that up. Where he says about John.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because how many times did the Messiah have an opportunity to foretell Paul
in a positive light, to look to him as a carrier of the gospel after he leaves the gospel to the Gentiles, and did not. I mean, shouldn't it tell us something by the absence, the mere absence? He made mention of John the Baptist. Why would he have forgotten Paul if Paul was supposedly the leader of dispensational truth to all Christians?
Here it is. I found it. It's Matthew 11:11. Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there has not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Okay, that's good. I'm glad I read that. I didn't mean it to sound like John was least, but just who, notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force.
That's been one of the most enlightening verses that I've read, because I had to sit and really meditate. What does that mean, the violent take it by force? And it was just, this was my pre-Paul days, just profoundly understanding was put into me that the violent that take it by force, we're not talking about actual knives and swords. We're talking about people that proclaim a different gospel, that lay claim to the kingdom. And who is that that does that except the
right.
Christian?
Oh, in the parable, here comes his son. Let's kill him and steal his inheritance. Parable of the vineyard.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
and steal his inheritance.
Yeah.
Wow.
Take it by force.
That's,
kill him.
That's why.
Violent.
Right, that Paul overlaid his own gospel over the story that was meant, the inheritance that was meant for the remnant. He overlaid his own gospel and deceived many. If it were possible, even the very elect, except the Father says that, or the Son says that not one that the Father has given him shall fall out of his hand. So we're safe. It's not possible to be led astray if you truly are called by his voice and hear it.
I wonder about that. You know, is it impossible? I still think we have free will in that area. But as far as the tempter goes, our adversary, yeah. Father doesn't tempt us, as James says. So don't even go there. But, yeah, our adversary is tempting us constantly,
sure.
If possible, you know, if possible to fool us. I don't, you know, I'm just speaking for myself. I want to remain humble. I want to remain grateful. And I'm still searching and seeking his truth in every way possible. And, you know, I don't want to have that flattery, as you will. You know, I've said the magic words, or I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and or like the Pharisee and the publican that go up to the temple, and the Pharisee is, you know, holding his hands out and saying, I've done all these wonderful things, and I tithe this, and I do that, and thank goodness I'm not like this publican over here. And the publican doesn't even dare to raise his eyes up to heaven, and he says, forgive me for I'm wrong. I'm not walking in your ways. I'm not doing these things. You know, please take pity on me. You know, forgive me. And I know, like Yusha says, and that the publican is the one that went away justified for those actions, for humbling himself. I try to I try to remember that and not get prideful, because it can be kind of, for me anyway, to see Paul for who he is, to have this come into my life, to be woken up to this fact that the Antichrist is there. He's right there in our writing, and it's in that test is right there for everybody, as individuals, to see it and understand it. With all the warnings the Messiah gave, everything even the prophets gave, all the warnings even from the latter days that Joseph prophesies over his 12 sons, in 49, chapter 49 is Genesis. All of those things start coming back to memory and coming to light, and I'm like, who am I? Why? You know, I'm very grateful to be woken up to this thing, like Chris, to right there in our faces. It's like Christy was saying, I thought flat earth was something, grand, a great deception. But after you start learning, the other ones start unfolding on you. It's like, no, it's just one of the pieces of the great deception, that's for sure. But is flat earth truly salvifical? Is it salvational? Is it something? For me, it's not. But for the, for the agnostic or the atheist, it very well could be. Once they realize that they live in a giant, purposely made terrarium that was made for us, everything was put in there and placed, and then man was brought into the picture then, after everything was already set up for him to live in. I mean, this is our home. We're not going anywhere. But is that salvational for me? No, not necessarily, but it just points out that there's, all these lies and deceptions, that go against the warning that Messiah said. First of all, make sure that no man deceives you. And here we are finding all these deceptions, but the Paul deception promulgated through Christianity, that is probably, today, that is the greatest deception that I've come across yet. And that's probably more salvational than anything else. It's more obvious to me anyway, that anybody that speaks like the Antichrist, quotes this Antichrist, the Paul, so I'm speaking of, is participating and becoming one of many Antichrists in the world. The greatest deception to me. Thank you. I try. I'm not really articulate or anything. I'm not a speaker, but I'm glad I understood.
It's interesting to me that a very modern saying is being revealed as being one that's very true of old. The best way to hide something is in plain sight.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what makes it so deceptive, because the very answer to the question is written in the very Bible that also contains the truths that reveal the answer. It's so profound.
Yeah, whether it's the Protestant 66 canon or the Catholic 73 canon, with all of the other scriptures removed by the religions around us that think that they can control scripture, the words of our Father. It's becoming apparent that they haven't been able to do that. But I also think there's an agreement there, just like there was with Job. Have you considered my servants? Go ahead and test them. We shouldn't think that we're any better than Job or any safer than Job. I mean, my goodness, he loved Job, his servant.
I don't think people expect have, even though we were told by the Messiah that, for example, when he said, can Beelzebub cast out Beelzebub, he gave us a big clue right there that the enemy will pin himself against himself and play both sides of the fence in order to create a situation where, for example, when there became an attack on the word Christmas and you weren't allowed to say, or, you know, I use that word loosely, not allowed, but where it became a thing where you had to say Happy Holidays because it was politically incorrect to say Merry Christmas. And so, you know, you had the big campaign by Trump, I'm going to bring Christmas back again and we're going to say Merry Christmas again. And so all the Christians are like, yay. And it seems like a good thing, but in truth, whether it's Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas, it's paganism. It's of the world, and that's what the very big mystery has been, how that group of people could be led down the primrose path falsely, thinking that they were his and that they were working miracles in his name and saying, Lord, Lord, and being his child and even, you know, going out and, you know, many, many people being leaders, proselytizing others to become saved by this doctrine that Paul created. And in truth, the enemy just said, I don't care if you choose Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas. I'm just using this as an example.
Right.
I don't care which one you choose because they're both pagan. And as long as you are for one or the other, you know, you're keeping one or the other, you aren't doing the truth because people don't keep Christmas and the holy days. You're far away from the Father. That's where I want you. And I will be willing to divide myself into 100 billion pieces and denominations and sects and organizations and the Protestants and the Catholics and the, you know, and even all of the other religions. That's fine. I can divide. Watch how many places and ways I can divide myself. As long as they don't find the truth of the Father, I don't care which version of myself they choose. And that's what's happened. Beelzebub has duplicated himself, and he's become a chameleon and looked like whatever flavor in the world he wanted to accept the truth. And so, therefore, the Father, the Son, spoke to us and said, can Beelzebub cast out Beelzebub? I mean, he told us right there.
No, that's a good point. That's excellent. You got it. Yeah. And that's a Hegelian way of operating, playing both sides.
So true.
And in actuality, neither side is the ways of the Father. It's a complete distraction. Yeah. Like you said, if you can just get us wrong in one area of our lives, or, I was thinking when you were talking about Christmas, you know, and people and friends around you saying, well, you just don't, you know, it's traditional and it's a family thing. And I've heard many times, like, for instance, Halloween. If you don't let your kids dress up and go trick-or-treating, you just don't love the kids. You just don't love your children, do you, Rachel?
Just no fun. You're just no fun. They won't get the candy, and they won't have the family memory of everybody going as a Suicide Squad or the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. We've taken Samhain, the Day of Darkness and Wickedness, and we've turned it into something good now. Yeah. Really good at repurposing everything. Is steering us away at the same time. And our enemy is really good.
It's a very good word to use, repurposing. It's
you know, sometimes I feel like I stumble to find the words to explain what I see here, but that's really what Paul did, was take the truth and repurposed it, draped over falsehood, and then had everybody follow it.
Yeah. And you don't even have to do that either. It's just whatever it takes, like he said, like Paul wrote there. And that cracks me up, that people miss that part right there, especially Torah keepers or the Hebrew Roots movement or even the Messianic Jews. They miss that part there. And, they love Paul. They all quote Paul for doctrine. But here he is saying, I become all things to all men. I become a Jew to a Jew. And then it says in parentheses there, even though I am not under the Torah, and I become a Gentile to a Gentile, an invalid to an invalid. I act like a weak person. Yeah, I do whatever it takes to get people to emulate him, to follow him, to do what he does. And it's doublespeak, it's double-mindedness, it's two-faced and hypocrisy. And that's Christianity. It's the ways of the world still, even. The worst ones practicing doublespeak are our politicians, our government. And they're the worst. Followed by religion. And politics and religion. Just both very two-faced. I'll have to share a video with you, and there's a man that's being interviewed.
That'll be great.
And he wrote the book called Doublespeak, and it's hilarious, but it's all factual, and it should really bother people, but the way that he wrote it, it's just hilarious. It's like, can't you see how dumb and this guy's a professional speaker, professional politician, and he gives some great examples in there. Like one was when the military was sent over
insane.
The special ops. It's insanity.
He's professional, but he's also insane.
Yeah.
And you would have to say some of this. Yeah, right. I mean, absolutely crazy.
The one example I like that the author gave in that book, Doublespeak, was what was his name? He had a brother who was a president back then. Billy Carter was when they sent the special forces over in the helicopters to get, supposedly this happened. Anyway, who knows anymore? I just don't trust anything that we hear or read or see in mainstream media at all, especially what comes from Washington, D.C., that pit. But sending over the special unit to get the hostages out of Iran, and they hit that sandstorm and ended up crashing, and one helicopter ended up running into the other and killing them, the rescuers. And Carter says, it was a failed success.
Oh, my
All right,
word.
That's doublespeak. And that's the art of doublespeak, two-faced. It's really interesting. It goes right up there with the occult language of legalese. It's right up there. It's one of those favorite ones where you really start paying attention to people, how they speak, and you also watch yourself on how you speak. I find myself not saying I understand anymore. I find myself saying things like I comprehend or I know what you're saying. But I never put myself under my standing under anybody, if possible, anymore.
It's
fascinating.
I was just watching a program called Made, and it's about a woman that becomes a single mom by choice because she is emotionally abused by herself, and she's in court. He tries to take the child from her, and she in court, the lawyer states, my client, or not my client, but the defendant failed to legal, therefore she illegally legaled, and kept using the word legal, and so the judge said, what do you have to say about that? She goes, I don't understand. So she couldn't even defend herself because she didn't even know what had been said to her. So it's kind of, you know, the art of words. And that's what Paul meant when he said, I got you with trickery. I got you with the craft of the language. You didn't understand that I took away the power of the Messiah when I said that the Father raised him. Like in the very sinner's prayer, we're taught to say, you know, repeat after me. And part of what you say is that you know that the Father raised the Son from the dead. Well, he didn't raised the Son from the dead. The Son raised himself from the dead. And you've just declared in Paul's trickery, you've fallen for stating that the Messiah has no power.
Right. You've cursed him, basically. You called him a liar when he said, all power and authority has been given to me in heaven and in earth. Well, he says, no man takes my life. I lay it down of my free will. I have the power to take it up. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it back up. This commandment I have of my Father.
Absolutely.
And really, who is our Messiah? That's such a simple question, and but it's a hard answer for a lot of people. You know, who is the Messiah?
The meaning of words, so important. And I think, you know, I was thinking as you were talking earlier, and which that can be dangerous, right? But it just really came to me that
who, me talking to you thinking?
When you leave,
sorry, I didn't mean
to. When you leave no, you're fine. When you leave the decision to the person for their own heart to be made manifest, then that's what you're going to have is a person that is not going to find the Father in heaven. Has anybody found the Father in heaven through Paul? He, when he becomes all things to all people and allows you basically the liberty of being whatever version of error that you want to be or follow, he has left you to the devices of your own heart, which are wicked beyond all, as is said in Proverbs. What person has ever had a heart left unto itself that found the Father? I don't know if what I'm seeing can be portrayed in a way that can be understood by our audience or you, but it's just something that I see very clever about his ways when he, instead of saying, you must believe this one way, and by doing so, led a very narrow path of people to hell, he instead made it a fanfare. And by doing that, he left it to your heart, to our heart, to the people's heart, to pick the flavor of error that they wanted. But he knew that people would pick a flavor because everybody wants to live for themselves and not the Father. There's only a very few remnant that want to live for the Father.
Right. Going back to Genesis, and this is further detailed in the book of Adam and Eve, but you remember the adversary, Satan, entered into the serpent, And he was, the serpent is described as being more cunning and more subtle than all the other animals. But when you read the book of Adam and Eve, this wasn't the first time that Satan had done this. He'd tried many times previously, but it seems he was successful with the serpent because it was the most cunning and subtle of all of the animals. And here he is playing the same game. He tried many different methods there. First, he was trying to kill off the people of the way, having them imprisoned, robbed, beaten, tortured, killed. And it just didn't seem to work out so well. So he tried another method, something more subtle, something more cunning. Like you said, I caught you with trickery and deceit, with guile. He was more subtle this time. He got him from inside. Couldn't beat him from the outside, so tried to join him from the inside. And corrupt from within. He certainly did. I mean, he certainly tried. So it's like our enemy here again.
It's just trying
any method.
Having become aware of this, I somewhat find it an interesting trip through the mind to analyze how he did what he did. And it's just very interesting to see that he offered something for nothing. And it's, like you said, it's that same old trickery that happened in the garden, offering something for nothing. Take a bite of this fruit and you shall live. You shall live forever. And actually,
you'll be your own God. Yeah, you can do your
right,
own will then.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's declaring
the
end from the beginning.
What I'm trying to get across is that his doctrine leads one to be able to be their own God of sorts.
Yes. Mhm. Yeah, you can have your own rules, make up your own rules. You'll be just like the Most High then. Yeah, we're in the same boat as Job was in. I really believe that.
Absolutely. I liked what you said about that last week. And the hedge of protection around Job being the commandments, the law that he kept, and
right.
That was pretty profound. That was pretty profound. What do you say on, you know, Christians will say that if we do anything of our own, that what is sin to a Christian, these are Paul's words, that's why Romans 3:7, anything not done
right
in faith is sin. So you could sin in faith and be holy, but you can keep a commandment out of faith and be sinning, according to Paul. That trickery, turning things upside down that he does. But what do you say about, you know, they say, if I do anything out of my own flesh, then it is sin. And therefore, they actually think that unless the Father in heaven has commanded you as an individual to keep the Sabbath, that you're sinning by keeping the Sabbath and you're becoming a stumbling block to others. Even if you were called to keep the Sabbath, if you tell other people about it and they weren't called to keep the Sabbath, that you're becoming a stumbling block to them. When the Messiah himself in Revelation talks about what a stumbling block is, somebody who leads them away from his ways.
Right, exactly. Who is your Messiah? It comes back to that simple question again. Who is your Messiah? Is it Paul? You know? Messiah made things very clear. Nothing has changed. They're following Paul, and essentially they end up wanting to be their own God, like they're wanting to have things, you know, take it by violence, if you will, take the kingdom of heaven by violence, press themselves into it when they really don't have anything to do with it. It's the Father's ways, not their own.
I just didn't know if you had a take or anything to add on that, because I hear that a lot from Christians, and especially before my Pauline days when I did feel called to keep the Sabbath. And I worded it that way with the Christians. I thought I still was a Christian. I couldn't understand why I was a different Christian and why there was such a great divide between my kind of Christian and the other kind of Christian. And so I found the story of Korah in the Old Testament, where he basically is a type and shadow of a modern day Christian, and saying, you know, maybe you're from the devil, Moses, and maybe I hear from God, and God really loves me, and maybe these commandments are all, you know, not at all what he wants us to do. And so Moses,
yeah, who are you,
Aaron,
to tell us what
to
do, Moses?
And,
yeah.
Exactly. And he said, okay.
When the whole camp is holy.
Right. And, okay, we'll see who is correct. If you're correct, you will die a natural death. And if I'm correct, you're going to die tomorrow. And then the earth opened up and swallowed Korah and his camp.
Just like it does at the end of time,
so,
in Revelation. Yeah. The earth opens up again. And I think that's what happens to those that he says specifically, why do you call me master, master? You know, when you do not the will of my Father. You think that you've done all these things in my name, but I don't know you. You practice lawlessness. You practice breaking the law. You look for loopholes. You do it the way you want to do it, and you do what you want. And other things you just ignore completely. And they're not doing the will of his Father, just like Korah wasn't. Moses said, "I haven't made up any of these things out of my own mind, not at all. This is the way it is." Korah says, "Well, who are you? We're all holy, right?" Same kind of thing at the end. I've said magic words and I've pronounced myself saved, and so that they're going to be swallowed up. Did I lose you?
No, I was meditating on what you were saying here. I'm still meditating. There's such a gap when you talk to a Christian, and that's just one of their main key points. They really believe that if something's not done in faith, that they're sinning, and they really believe that you can be sinning by keeping the Sabbath day, when it's a commandment of the Father in heaven. And that just, I guess that, oh, foolish Galatians, has gotten to their head, who has bewitched you? And, the line that you make the death of Christ of none effect when you keep the commandment. It's actually poisoned them for, they fear keeping the commandments because they think that works is a lack of faith. It's just, I just didn't know if you had any profound words to say on what to say to a Christian on that matter, you know?
Well, James, is the rebuttal to that. You know, it's not of yourself, but it's a free gift from the Most High. It's not of yourself. It's not of works, lest anyone should boast, as Paul says. You know, James says, no, wait a minute here. How can you show me by a faith, by a lack of nothing? How can you show me your faith by nothing? By just words or whatever. When I show you my faith by my actions, by my works, they prove that what's coming out of my mouth is true. It's more than a desire. It's more, you're actually doing it. Like he says, it will be, the law will be written on your hearts and you will do it. And that's what the Comforter, his set-apart spirit, will cause us to do, will move us in that direction to keep his ways and to do them. That is the fruit of the Spirit, if you will, or fruit of the Father's Spirit. This other spirit that Paul talks about, that's the enemy. Paul's spirit causes us to not walk in his ways, but to walk in the ways of our own heart and of our own imagination. And as Moses wrote, they went backwards then when they started walking in the imagination of their own heart. They started going backwards. They went back to what they were doing in Egypt before. They started lusting after all of those things and did far worse than their fathers before them. And that's pretty much what Paul is been trying to do the whole time. Like you said, he's become all things to all men, whatever it takes to get you to miss the point, to miss the mark. And that is to fear Yahuwah and keep his commandments. For that is the whole duty of man.
To love the Father and keep his commandments.
Mm-hmm. Fear Yah and keep his commandments. And that form of fear is reverence. It's obedience. You're investing yourself. You're putting your time into your words by actions, and pretty soon you do become, you're in a relationship with him, man. You are beginning to love him. You do love him, and it's not burdensome anymore. Maybe at first it might be, because it's just not what everybody else is doing around us. So it's different. Say everybody, but I mean the majority of the people are not doing what the Father commandment, what the Son said. They're picking and choosing, and Paul is their outs for it, their reasoning for it. They use Paul. He's like their lawyer, their Torah lawyer. I'm not quite saying what I'm trying. I'm not saying what I mean here. Trying to. I'm not very articulate, I'm sorry.
I'm tracking with you.
Oh, good. Somebody is.
that's what is so interesting to me, is that you can have Galatians and you can have James in the same New Testament, and it never really clicked with 99% of all Christians what's going on here.
Right. Or even their pastors, for that matter. I've joked with pastors before. Actually, I was being serious, and I think that they thought I was joking. But I've talked to them about the impossibilities of how it is to talk about Galatians and James in the same sermon in order to get Galatians to jive with what James is saying. You have to remove probably 3/4 of the rest of what James is saying in order to get it to jive with Galatians, with Paul's version of faith, if you will. and they all laughed nervously. They laughed nervously, and most of them nod their heads. They've seen it. They've seen the wolf coming, basically. So what Yusha says, they are hirelings whose the sheep are not. And when they see the wolf coming, they run. They leave the flock. And then the flock is scattered by this wolf. And there we have more divisions again. Yeah.
It's like adding baking soda to vinegar, trying to add Galatians to James, and it's just going to get spewed out. It's just going to be a chemical reaction. They can't both stay in the same vessel.
No, they can't. No, you can't take the whole of James and Galatians and assimilate them together. It just absolutely does not work. I mean, there has to be something wrong with us mentally. It's bipolar. They're polar opposites. And trying to assimilate them together it's like mixing the gospel, Paul's gospel of grace, his Greco-Roman theology of hope, faith, and charity as grace, as being having anything to do with the gospel of the kingdom of righteousness. It just can't be done. It's biblical hopscotch, and you're just skipping over things that need to be addressed. And I don't know why people are so afraid. Perhaps it's comments that he's written in there, like if a messenger from Yahuwah comes down and says something differently than what Paul said, you're just supposed to curse him. And I wonder how many times people actually get a messenger, actually receive a good talking to by the Father Spirit. No, that's not right. You just read the opposite, and now you're over here reading Paul's epistles and believing that's my way?
I must have received a good talking to by the set-apart spirit reading Paul, because I have all kinds of notes in the margins. Wait a minute, you said this over here, and now you're saying this. I could actually say that back to Paul. Like, wait, Paul.
That's awesome.
What the heck? And I would reference another verse elsewhere where he said the direct opposite. So I was starting to put the puzzle together, and I made decisions in my life based on the fact that I could not just jive with the whole submission to a man thing, and because I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to trust my salvation to another person, period, regardless of what sex they are. This just seems like a big hookup to shut up half of all humans, women, and then control the other half, men, by creating a hierarchy amongst them of, who they are in the church. And I did see that, I didn't understand that Paul was evil, though, but I did see that that was a big hookup for control.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of our friends, our sisters now waking up to and seeing the contrast in Paul's words. It's like it doesn't make any sense to say that, like Paul writes, in Christ Jesus, we are all one in Christ Jesus. There is no Jew, there is no Gentile, there is no slave, there is no free, there is no male, there is no female. And then later on in another later letter, he writes and says, ladies, you need to shut up. So, I mean,
exactly.
What is it?
Exactly, bingo.
Wait a minute. If I'm not a female anymore in Christ Jesus, why are you addressing me as though I'm a female? Ugh.
Well, and it's a classic sign of emotional abuse to have somebody crazy make you. They literally make you think that you're the one that's crazy to spot their error and their weirdness.
called crazy making, and in philosophy, and that's exactly what he does. He's a crazy maker. He makes you crazy. He makes you think you're crazy when you spot his error.
Scattered, scatterbrained, scattered. Yeah. It's like even we see the wolf coming.
Which is exactly what the prophecy said in Genesis 49:23. In the evening he shall, let's see, what is it? In the morning he shall devour, and in the evening
he
shall divide the spoil. Yeah, devour the prey, and in the evening he shall divide or scatter the spoil.
Man, what does that not sound like infiltration? Yeah. Infiltrated, took over, and...
Absolutely.
Changed it all.
Absolutely.
Scattered it. Yeah.
What do you make of people that believe, say, you know, I have friends that have had, and I've had miracles happen, don't get me wrong, but I have known of people that have had miracles happen, one comes to mind where somebody had a safe and they were destitute. They had no money for bills or anything. And 3 months in a row on a certain day, a safe that only this one person knew the code to, supposedly, $1,000 was put into the safe, or they would open the safe that they were expecting to be empty, and $1,000 was in there. And then they finally prayed, I want to get a job and get money on my own. Thank you for the blessing. But, you know, this residual blessing of $1,000,
right.
They stopped now, and it stopped. Like, what do you make of, like, things like that? And then they're just, like, diehard Christians and believe that it came from the Father and, you know, Jesus Christ. So... I was just curious if you had an opinion.
Did Caesar's mammon come from the Father? No.
No.
No, it's such a, you know, what is a blessing? Yeah, what is a miracle? Like we've been told, Paul says, but I've worked the, I'm just kind of, working at this here, looking at another view of it, like what Paul says about himself. I've shown you all the signs of a true apostle by signs of working signs and wonders. I've shown you the definition of what an apostle is. Well, that's his definition. That's his version of it. But you, Yeshua, Messiah, told us what the qualifications would be for somebody who could be an apostle to him. And signs and wonders has nothing to do with that at all. That's not one of the qualifications, you know, of it at all. But as far as getting, you know, when somebody opens up their safe or whatever and finds some Caesar's mammon in there and say that it's a blessing from Yahuwah, it's like, it's kind of the opposite. To me, it's like saying the opposite, flipping it on its head. It's like saying, well, Yah is going to take something that's, of course, we know all the gold is his, all the cattle is his, everything is his. But to say that he's going to take something from somebody else, he's going to take mammon from Caesar, in other words, or from the Federal Reserve or whatever, and then bless you with it, it seems as though, I mean, to me, a food would wind up on your porch, you know, or your bills would automatically be paid, or somebody found a, you know, discrepancy in the books or something. Oh, you've already paid too much. You're covered this month or whatever. I think that is just signs and wonders to me, but it kind of goes, what
right,
you're asking me is also questions.
Paul said he, yeah.
Yeah, there's. I've been asked that before in regards to like babbling repetitive nonsense. Well, people will come in and lay their hands on somebody who's sick and do this Paul's version of speaking in tongues, which we know from Samuel is actually witchcraft, nonsensical babbling from people, ventriloquists who utter sounds from their bellies. We actually have a commandment that says not to do that. But anyway, I'm being asked this question, and these people become well. Yeah. There I go back to, you know, the Beelzebub. Can Beelzebub cast out Beelzebub? I just look at it as signs and wonders. It's just whatever it takes to get you stuck in that mindset that we need to get out of believing that he's going to bless us with Caesar's mammon, that he's going to bless us with the things of this world to keep us involved in the things of this world. I appreciate what your friend and you were had that opportunity that you were sharing with me, and you know, I was intrigued. I listened to it, and me personally, I had to just step back and say, that's kind of the wrong direction for me at this point. For me, I'm trying to get away from the things of the world and the uses and the things that help me get those things in of the world or whatever. I want to get away from those things. I don't want to have money is what I'm saying. I don't want to have Caesar's mammon or the Federal Reserve notes or things like that. He has things in store for us that we haven't even thought about. You know, like he says, I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry about it. Or, because Messiah said, take no thought for those things for the morrow, for the evil of today is sufficient enough. I'm just like you and everybody else. I can't help but worry. Sometimes it really, and I have to get my wits about me. It's like, no, he promised, and it is a promise that he's going to take care of us no matter what, through thick or thin. Like Job says, though he may slay me, though he kills me, I'm never going to give up my faith in him. I'm never going to stop believing and keeping his ways and his commandments. Seeing as that is a miracle, what's the difference between a miracle and signs and wonders? I guess we just have to I don't know. I don't have an answer for you on that.
Right. I think, you know, the truth is the truth. And as we've already analyzed the character of the anti-Messiah, is that he will do whatever it takes, including allowing us to pin manifestation that we perceive to be positive on the Father in heaven. Just like anybody that becomes a millionaire or anybody that is, you know, the recipient of a seeming apparent miracle, course, a Christian's going to thank God for that and not understand that they don't even know who he is if they're not keeping his ways.
Right, that he doesn't even hear their prayers. Like it says, those who turn their ear away from even hearing the Torah, their prayer is an abomination. I don't have an answer for you on that there. I really don't, except for, I look to the charismatic movement, the people that are involved in that, like the Kenneth Copelands and the Jesse Duplantis, and they teach that if you're poor, it's because you're not blessed. If you don't have money, you know, overflowing, it's because you're not blessed. You're not. Of course, they come back and end it with, it's because you're not tithing 10% of your hard-earned money to me, you know, at the end of their sermon. But
right, it's a racket.
And if you give me a dollar, well, if you give me a dollar, the Most High has promised to give
you
10.
You're going to get 10.
Yeah, 10 in return. And here they are. Oh, okay, here's a dollar. And, well, the reason why you didn't get $10 back in return is because you're still not pleasing him. Or, you know, they really bring people down in that whole movement there. They've really hurt a lot of people that needed help and people that were struggling financially. And they believe that because they were struggling financially, it was because they were cursed. You know, and they read Malachi to them. You've cursed with a curse.
Well, and some of the ministries have been exposed, but not enough, and there's not been an association made a connection made.
I mean, how much money did our government give, what's his name, Joel Osteen, for his tithing losses during the whole pandemic? They gave him $4 million.
I had no idea.
They gave him $4 million. Yeah. He declared that as a loss.
And there's a good example
of
somebody that has that sound in their voice that I'm talking about. There's an excellent example.
Oh, yeah, Slick Willie.
It almost sounds, well...
It's serpent language.
It's almost a little, yeah. Well, believe it or not, we just have 4 minutes this week in this fellowship, so I enjoyed this time with you. Alex had stated that he wasn't going to be available today, so we missed Alex today. If you're a regular here, we certainly love the fact that you tune in and listen in. And I've checked the numbers, and we've got quite a number of people that tune into us. We do have the ability to track at least the Freedomizer side of it, and then it gets put. The broadcast gets put out onto other.
Awesome.
Platforms, and so from there, I don't know, but our program keeps up with or is greater than any of the other programs, which is not the goal at all. I wouldn't have such a narrow topic if I was simply about popularity, but it's great to know that so many people are enjoying the program and fellowshipping with us, even if they're not out there hopping on the call and talking, but you're always welcome if you want to come in next week to do so. Definitely welcome. So our number here, if you want to write it down, 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208, and press 1 to talk to us. We're here 2 to 5 Central each week, and Aaron, it's been a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And we shall
yes.
We shall see you next week, hopefully. All right.
Yeah. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. I don't know if I can play closing music or not. It's given me a little bit of an issue. So I guess we won't have closing music. We'll just say Shabbat Shalom and go and be amazing in your relationship with the Father and follow him. He will not lead you astray. He will lead you straight to him.
That's right.
Many blessings.
Right. Shalom, everyone. Happy Sukkot.
Happy Sukkot.